Hi everyone, and thank you very much for joining us on another episode of Lid, a publishing's podcast, Lid Radio. My name is Miro, and as always, I will be your host for today's show. With me today, I have a very special guest. He is the author of The Polymath, Unlocking the Power of Human Versatility, Waqas Hakmet. How are you today?
I'm very well, Miro. How are you?
I'm fine, thank you, and thank you very much for taking the time to join us on the podcast. And there's a lot I want to discuss today about the book, because it is such a fascinating experience to read. But before we get into that, for our audience, Waqas is an internationally acclaimed writer whose work spans several professional fields and academic disciplines, including art, science, and international affairs. And we're very happy to have him today to talk about The Polymath. But before we do, I really want to ask you, what actually inspired you to become an author and start writing?
Miro, my initial intention was never really to write or to become an author. It was never a real ambition from the onset. It just came about through ideas that I had developed through my life and my career, or my multiple careers. So actually, I felt compelled to put this in some form of creative expression. It could have been a painting, it could have been a musical piece, it could have been a film. In this case, I felt it would be best expressed and articulated as a book. It came about through my experiences in art, in science, through my experiences and conversations with different people. So actually, yes, being an author wasn't the original idea. It's something that came about as a result of other experiences and ideas.
Fantastic, and it's always very exciting to hear that, you know, you've taken to being an author from having all these experiences. And I often find in conversation with authors that's a lot of the times the case, and it simply feels like the right thing to do. But let's get into The Polymath, because there's a lot I want to cover with you. And the first thing is actually the title of the book itself, The Polymath. Could you perhaps run us through what is a polymath and how did you go around when you were creating the title?
The polymath is has been described in different ways, has been defined in different ways over the years. Poly meaning many, and math meaning knowledge. So a polymath is somebody that has knowledge in various fields. So the polymath is the title of the book because I'm exploring the idea that an individual is inherently multifaceted and has the potential or propensity to be versatile and apply their creativity, their intelligence, and their experiences to various fields, unlike the idea that's prevailing today, which is that everybody ought to specialize in one field, have one career, ideally a lifelong career, and they ought to do everything in their power to guard that speciality. And so I'm challenging this narrative of hyper-specialization that pervades the entire system and society we live in, whether it's the education system or the workplace and the employment system. I think we need a new way of looking at what specialization actually is, whether or not it still has any applicability or relevance to the 21st century, and actually what are people's innate desires or ambitions when it comes to their career, when it comes to their pursuit of knowledge. So that's where the title comes from.
Absolutely, and that is such a fascinating concept. And I suppose, you know, the question that really comes to my mind after this is, what he said in the beginning is the fact that, you know, society at large has this idea of, you know, specializing in a certain thing. And as you mentioned, whether it is, you know, in education, in academia, at work, in our personal lives, you know, this does seem to be the case. However, as you also mentioned, every human is born with multiple things that they excel at and potential in a lot of different aspects. So I suppose the logical question from that would be, why do, you know, our parents, even schools, employers, always insist that we, you know, we have to restrict all of this essentially limitless potential and specialize in just one thing? Where does this idea come from?
This idea has a long history. We have to understand that the current professional landscape as well as the current education system, and indeed as the current way in which we bring up our children has been influenced by a historical evolution. And one example would be the Industrial Revolution here in the United Kingdom, which fostered a particular work environment, which was the division of labor, and it was primarily for a factory setting. And actually, even the education system, the mass education system that developed during the same time, was to cater for that division of labor, factory, workplace environment. Of course, we don't live in that environment anymore. The life is much more complex in general. The employment landscape is much more complex. Some of the main challenges that we face in the world, whether it be climate change, whether it be the economy, whether it be global security, whether it be seeking to understand space and beyond, these are all complex problems that are multifaceted, multidimensional, so cannot be seen in the same way as, for example, industrial productivity and output was seen 150 to 200 years ago. So that is just one example of a particular phenomenon that has affected the way we see society. There are others too, for example, in the education system, that came about also as a result of a particular way in which we saw philosophy develop in the West especially, which was not holistic, much like those of the Eastern philosophies, but it was more reductive. So, for example, Cartesian philosophy encourages the breaking down of different disciplines into various segments so that they can be better understood in isolation from one another. But, of course, today, context means everything. So we need to understand any given subject area, whether it's in our workplaces, whether it's during our studies, we need to understand it within the context of the wider environment, which is why multiple subjects need to be studied and pursued in order to excel in any given one.
Yeah, that's absolutely fascinating. And what you mentioned there about especially the employment side of it and the way that's developing is something that really does stick out for me, because not only in my personal experience, but having talked to people, especially in the digital landscape, so whether it is, you know, IT, digital marketing, you know, design, whatever that might be, it does seem to be that there is an absolute shift happening. And it seems to be something like this. You need to be able to understand different disciplines, and if you don't, it's very easy to be left behind. You know, you need to understand a bit of design, you need to understand how digital marketing works, you need to also understand web design, and that's something that I've personally come across too. But there is something there on the idea of speed and how quickly it is happening. I mean, even if you look back, you know, less than 10 years in the way technology has moved and how this is all changing and very much supporting the argument of the polymath, what role do you think technology plays in all this, or has played up until now?
Technology can be used, much like any vehicle for change, in a positive or a negative way. In the case of what we've been speaking about, technology can be used to foster further specialization or hyper-specialization, or it can be used to expand one's horizons and explore various fields and look at any given subject with a greater, more rounded outlook. So let's look at a few examples. So if we look at Amazon or YouTube, when we go on and we feel that through the algorithmic structure, we have been provided with the most apt recommendations for what we ought to be reading or what we ought to be watching, but that doesn't take into account a variety of other factors, such as what we have the potential to be interested in or what that might connect with, which is seemingly unrelated but actually is very related and which would be of interest. This is not currently being addressed within modern technology. In fact, if you go to your Amazon wish list, for example, or your recommendation list, it will be related to what you've already read or what you've already purchased. That seems like a very efficient way of recommending something that you'd be interested in, but actually it's closing your mind to other worldviews, other perspectives, other fields, and so on. So in that respect, technology can be quite restricting. On the other hand, of course, if you are fully conscious of this, you can make active efforts to push out and to explore various fields, various perspectives, so you can actually be more proactive in doing so. And of course, technology does allow you to do so if you are conscious of these matters. So I think it can work in one or two ways.
Yeah, absolutely. And going to the research that you did and all the work that you've done around the book and, you know, in preparation to writing it, were there perhaps any recent figures or perhaps even historical figures that were polymaths that really stuck out for you?
Yes, of course. If you go through the book, there are hundreds of polymaths that have been identified. As you probably know, Miro, there are those individuals that have been referred to as polymaths in popular culture, but aren't really when you look at it according to the definition outlined in the book, whereas there are those over history and even today that we identify as being specialists, but actually if you look into their lives, they are incredibly versatile, and we don't know them for many of the things that they've achieved outside of the field for which they're most known. So I'll give you an example today. If you look at someone called Nathan Myhrvold, who was a renowned technologist and scientist who became the chief technology officer of Microsoft about 15 to 20 years ago. And he was at the top of his field. And of course, people assumed that this man was an out-and-out technologist and scientist because of his role. Or maybe he was in a business executive. But actually, he resigned from that position when he was at the top and still relatively young in order to pursue his other interests. So he then resigned to become a professional wildlife photographer, a professional chef who's written a best-selling book.
Wow.
On modern, it's called Modernist Cuisine. He pursued his interest in astronomy and began publishing papers in astronomy and cosmology journals, together with various other interests. I mean, he actually also started up a business called Intellectual Ventures, which has, I think, holds the largest amount of patents under its portfolio, vis-a-vis any other invention company in the United States. So he's excelled in business too. So he is an example of somebody who's defied the dominant narrative, defied the dominant system in order to pursue what he felt was true to him and has been successful in doing so. So again, this whole idea that one needs to find a financial, some kind of financial security in having one career only, this is not the case from my research into various people that have taken an alternative approach. That's Nathan Myhrvold from today, but there have been many people in the past. The quintessential archetype of the polymath, in the Western mind at least, is Leonardo da Vinci. Leonardo da Vinci, again, is somebody that came from a place of tremendous adversity in terms of his socioeconomic background, in terms of the fact that he was vegetarian, probably homosexual, left-handed. He was an outcast, and yet he managed to excel in various disciplines, not just one. We know that. So these are some examples that's really stood out for me, but there are many, many from other parts of the world, outside of the West, which is often neglected, places in Asia and Africa that produce their own polymaths of tremendous note, but are unfortunately not acknowledged enough here in the West, because of course we have quite a Eurocentric way of looking at history and looking at the world at large, which I think is quite unfortunate.
Yeah, absolutely. And of course, I'm sure the people listening to this podcast, they'll be checking out Nathan's cookbook to see how he's ventured in that area. But let's talk a bit about ourselves as individuals, as we've developed. So I don't think it's a stretch to say that you yourself are an absolute polymath. As we discussed in the beginning, you know, you've been in so many different areas, you've researched so many different things, not just in the preparation for this book, but as yourself as an individual as well. So for those that are listening to this podcast, can you perhaps give us a tip or two on how we can begin to develop our polymath selves? And, you know, starting tomorrow, we walk into the office or whatever we may be, or whatever we might be doing, and how can we begin to develop this side?
Sure. Well, thank you so much for the compliment. I'm often quite skeptical of referring to myself as a polymath, simply because I've seen the absolute genius of true polymaths that has manifested in such a special way over history and today. But nonetheless, I am able to resonate with such minds and such lives because I live. I have a tremendously diverse background, as you've specified. In terms of how we could pursue this life or this approach to life in today's society, it's not easy. However, I think the way I've described it within the book is that one needs to go on an internal journey first and foremost, and understand what their own strengths and weaknesses and opportunities and potential actually are. And once you've done that, once you've been honest with yourself, once you've had various experiences, done various jobs, studied various things, and been truly open and honest with yourself about which multiple ambitions you then have or interests you then develop, then you must be true to yourself again and pursue those multiple ambitions and interests and find platforms and vehicles that allow you to do so. So, as I said, it's not easy in today's work environment because there is a huge bias towards the quote-unquote specialist. But you can still find specialist roles that require you to look into your specialism from a more holistic, rounded perspective. And there are companies that encourage that. So I think that's something that you need to look into. If you're looking for a job, or even if you're in your existing job and you need to find how best to optimize your creativity in that, you're not going to be creative in that role unless you bring a fresh perspective to it from various other fields and perspectives. So I think that is a general approach you need to develop and also seek out in the workplace. In terms of your own personal development and your own education and learning, of course, lifelong learning has become a meme, has become something that's very fashionable these days. But you have to be very methodical about how you seek to learn about anything. First and foremost, ask yourself, why is it that I'm learning this? Why is it that I have this interest? What purpose might it serve for me? How will it allow, or how will it prepare me to make my contribution to society or to the field itself? So these initial questions are really, really very important, and they're not asked enough by any of us at school or when we're about to embark on a career. So once you get that right, then I think it's a case of staying true to that and seeking out employers, partners, professors, teachers that share that vision and will help you develop in that way.
Fantastic insight for those listening, and of course plenty to digest for our listeners. And the last question I want to ask you, Akash, is actually the one I ask every guest on the podcast here, and that's, what are you currently reading, or do you perhaps have any recommendations for our listeners?
Yes, I think, so the one I'm currently reading is a book called The Muqaddima. It's translated roughly as The Histories. But it's written by a 13th, 14th century polymath from North Africa. His name was Ibn Khaldun. He's become quite popular because Mark Zuckerberg and a few others have read him. But the reason why I find it very interesting is because he offers a very different narrative to history that we have today. But it also shows how certain thinkers, actually, despite being historians, can synthesize so many other subjects in order to make or develop some form of creative insights in that historical narrative. So he draws on and actually excels in subjects such as anthropology, various social sciences. He's often considered the father of social science, actually, as a discipline, and because he looks into aspects of economics, aspects of history and sociology, aspects of various sciences, biological science, even evolutionary science to a degree. So that's one book that I find absolutely fascinating and actually encapsulates the kind of ideas that we've been speaking about during this interview.
Yeah, fantastic. And of course, for those listening, if that sounds interesting to you, there will be a link in the description so you can go and you can check out that book as well. But with that, Wakasa, I'd like to thank you very much for joining me today on the podcast. It's been an absolute pleasure to have you.
Likewise, Mira. Thank you.
And of course, for our listeners, if you enjoyed our conversation today, please feel free to check out the links in the description below, where you can find out everything about the Polymath, and also you can reach out to us on social media and let us know what you think about today's podcast. And you should absolutely check out the Polymath website as well at www.the-polymath.com, where you can find out everything about the book. I'd also like to thank you very much again for joining us on this week's podcast episode, and as always, we very much look forward to seeing you next week.